Hello everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's Weekly News Roundup podcast, where I, Rod Jones, Content Manager, and Kate Cooper, Head of Research Policy and Standards at the Institute, take a critical look at what's been happening in the world of leadership and management up to the 24th of August 2020. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Our next story is a story in Forbes, and it talks about how to stop the body in seat mentality in one sentence. The story describes the body in seat mentality as one of the most insidious and destructive concepts in modern management. It essentially means that when employees have their bodies in their seats, it means they're productive. But Siemens, one of the world's largest companies, recently announced that they were ending the body in seat mentality. First, they stated that they're establishing mobile working as a core component of its new normal and will make it a permanent standard both during the global pandemic and beyond. For Siemens, mobile working means more than just working from home. Employees can choose the work locations where they're most productive. And then they delivered the sentence that spells the death knell for body in seat management, with Roland Busch, their deputy CEO, saying these changes will also be associated with a different leadership style, one that focuses on outcomes rather than on time spent at the office. We trust our employees and empower them to shape their work themselves so that they can achieve the best possible results. Kate, does this represent an important tipping point in companies managing employees with a body in seat mentality?
Well, it's a bold move, isn't it? And it takes bold moves to deliver real change. So actually challenging the idea that if you come and sit at your desk from 9 to 5, 5 days a week, that somehow you're more productive than if you were sitting in another place is great. I think we've got the evidence for that absolutely being so over the past few months with this big switch to home working. But it's saying a lot more than that, isn't it, really? Because it's saying we trust our employees to do a good job wherever they are. We don't need to be watching them. We don't need to be monitoring them. We're going to start looking at what they deliver at this outcome style of management that we've heard so much about, but so many people seem reluctant to let go of. And the people who are really campaigning for the return to offices, apart from those that have sort of vested commercial interests, are those that tend to say things like, well, you don't know if people are working unless you can see them. And that's not a high trust sort of statement, isn't it? So well done, Siemens. And let's hope this does mean we have a language to challenge that presenteeism that actually, I think, does so much damage.
Thank you, Kate. Well, our next story is a report by the World Economic Forum that working from home in the time of COVID means longer hours, more emails, and shorter meetings. Whilst many have found their working days extended, the report points out that they are not necessarily occupied for all that time. Some people have chosen to adopt a more flexible working arrangement, perhaps taking into account the demands of home life and children. It is unclear if this increase in average workday span represents a benefit or a drawback to employee well-being, concludes the report from researchers at Harvard Business School and New York University. On the one hand, the flexibility to choose one's working hours to accommodate household demands may empower employees by affording them more freedom over their schedule. On the other hand, the changing work schedule may be a consequence of a blurred distinction between work and personal life, in which case it becomes easy to overwork due to the lack of clear delineation between the office and home. So, Kate, should working from home be seen as a benefit or should it be seen as a drawback?
Don't you just love it, Rod, when big organisations and institutions like this release something that our research has been saying for years? We identified years ago that flexible working, being able to work from home, has a positive impact on work-life balance because of that very ability to flex your working day, to be able to work around the other demands on your time. So that's certainly something I agree with. We also know from our research that email overload is a huge problem when it comes to distributed teams. And it's one of the things that so many of the people who completed our surveys complained about, that propensity, if you can't see someone, to send them an email, which you would only do in a work context. You certainly wouldn't do it socially, or very unlikely. You'd phone them up, wouldn't you? So I think we've got to get better at working from home. We've got to get better at managing the boundaries. But the best way of achieving that is for the managers of these distributed teams to be able to say, this is what I expect of you. How you deliver that or how you manage your working day is up to you, but you are going to be judged on these outputs, and therefore how the day is spent, whether you work catch-up hours at midnight or start very early in the morning, is a personal choice, but it doesn't impact the productivity or what's expected of you. And as we've said so often with flexible working, it's flexible for the person or the team. You can't have mandatory flexible working policies, because the moment you try and introduce those, goodbye flexibility.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story also looks at flexible working, and it's perhaps an aspect we've not covered before in a podcast. It's a story in Business Leader that suggests remote and flexible working arrangements have helped to prevent further job losses during the COVID-19 pandemic. Latest figures from the Office for National Statistics have revealed that employment in the UK fell by the largest amount since May-April 2009, with employment decreasing by a total of 220,000 during Q2. According to the Office for National Statistics, the youngest workers, oldest workers, and those in manual occupations were the worst hit during the pandemic. However, Louise Deverell-Smith, founder of Daisy Chain, the online recruitment platform matching parents with flexible job roles, said, "One undeniable fact is that remote and flexible working arrangements have helped to prevent further job losses and could also be a lifeline when rebuilding the economy." Flexible employment platform Daisy Chain saw employer sign-ups triple in June, and the increase in flexible roles being posted continued throughout July. It demonstrates a clear shift in approach to working arrangements from employers. Kate, do you agree with Deverell-Smith that now is the perfect time for business to get creative with how they approach talented individuals who are now, unfortunately, back on the jobs market?
Yes, as our research revealed, one of the great benefits of flexible distributed working and having people primarily based at home is how it widens your talent pool. If you're demanding that somebody comes 5 days a week to a fixed geographical point, there are only so few people that are eligible for the post. If you say work from wherever you are, my goodness, you know, you've got a global marketplace almost for in terms of recruitment. So I am not surprised really that so many jobs have been saved because people have been able to work from home, especially I think in those organisations which said that this couldn't happen, we can't do it, you need to be able to see the staff and you need to be able to have the water cooler conversations. Some of that's right and some of it isn't right, and we have the evidence now that productivity doesn't fall and that companies can carry on working in these varied ways, and long may it continue. We've only been doing it for a few months. In a year's time, I think we'll be even better at it.
Thank you, Kate. And another aspect of this is a story in The Conversation that Zoom meetings help keep marginalised staff included, and we should keep having them even after offices reopen. The research cited suggests that enforced working from home during COVID-19 put remote workers on an equal footing with their office working colleagues, and that being online also allowed employees working in different branches or countries to socialise, potentially leading to new opportunities for collaboration, and that this led to a new sense of equality and inclusion between habitual remote workers and their office-based counterparts. The research acknowledges that there are challenges with remote working, but the researchers suggest, for example, that digital platforms can and should be used to allow remote workers to join formal and informal meetings taking place in offices, and that established collaboration habits, such as daily check-ins, could remain even when back in the office. Kate, should you agree that business should offer equal opportunities to remote workers through virtual platforms as far as possible?
course, it's surprising, isn't it? It's taken something like this to make us realise how marginalised distributed workers often are. And again, that's one of the things that we found in some research we did a couple of years ago, where you're part of a mixed team, it's very easy to be left out of social events. I think also maybe traditionally the more senior people are in organisations, the less likely are they are to be working from home. And therefore we've had people in senior positions saying, we've got to do something, we've got to socialise, we've got to have quiz nights, we've got to have online cocktail parties, we've got to keep the show on the road socially as well as in terms of the work that's got to be done. So there's been a huge shift in attitude as to how you include people, and again, very creative solutions to make that social element of work work online as it does. It's not all about going for a drink after work. There's so many ways, and it's very, very inclusive, because of course some people can't do that traditional drink after work for all sorts of different reasons, but anyone can join an online quiz night and feel part of what's going on and not feel marginalized, because everybody's in the same boat. And there's nothing like experiencing something firsthand to get that great insight to make you much more understanding and empathetic going forward.
Well, thank you very much, Kate. And that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the news and views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.